Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is Breaking Free with psychotherapist Lori Coburn. Tonight we will be talking about relationship communication issues, ego ploys that destroy relationships, the need to look at your own dark side and how that is being projected onto your partner, all those kinds of things that mess up our communication that we're not even aware of. But once we become aware of it, then we can change it. You can call in with your questions at 917-932-8881. You can also go to my website, loricoburn.com. That's Lori with two R's, L-O-R-R-I, Coburn, C-O-B-U-R-N. Click on the Ask Lori button, and I will email you an answer later in the week. We have been reading from the book, The One, Discovering the Secrets of Soulmate Love by Kathy Freston. And last week we looked at different ego ploys to make power struggles in relationships. And we went through three of them, but I'll review them briefly. Kathy notes that there are four different ego distraction methods or ego power struggle methods. The need to be right, the need to be in control, the need to be distracted, or the need to feel superior or inferior. And I'll just briefly review these. The need to be right. In A Course in Miracles, it says, would you rather be right or happy? When I did marriage counseling with couples, what I noticed was that more than wanting to promote the relationship, partners in the relationship usually wanted to be right and get their own way. And that goes for nice people and not so nice people, even people that know that that really doesn't work at some level and that you need to compromise. Basically, deep down, we all want our own way and we want to be right. And that's something that we have to consciously rise above in relationships in order to make it a win-win situation. In our relationships, we tend to actually take a combative view. And I like what one of my friends does with her marriage. She sees that her husband and herself both have their individual needs and their individual relationship issues. But she makes the marriage a third party, a separate entity on its own. And she's treats the marriage as another person almost, another being, another entity that needs its own nurturing and feeding. So she has her husband who has his needs, she has her needs, but the relationship has its needs, and she honors that as sacred. And it is amazing how she does that and how well it works. They have an excellent relationship. The second ego need is the need to be in control, the need to get other people to do things the way we want them to, because we're deep down so afraid that if we don't order the world the way we think it should look, that everything's going to fall apart and we're going to be left alone, depressed, friendless, left all alone in this big, bad, wide world. And where this stems from is that we all feel separate from our Creator. You can say this stems from childhood issues with mom and dad, where bad things happened in the family, so you learned how to cope in certain ways. And so you carry those coping mechanisms, defense mechanisms, if you will, into your adulthood. And if your partner doesn't honor those or doesn't work with you on those, it can get kind of tough. And I'm lucky enough to have a partner who lets me be me. No matter what weird ways I act in terms of my defense mechanisms, he just lets me be me. And I am so grateful to him for that. The third ego ploy to wreck relationships is the need to be distracted. Kathy Freston talks about how we stay busy with our lives, busy with the computers, busy with our work, busy with running the kids all around town to their different activities, busy, busy, busy. I had a friend say to me the other day, she has two young children, and if you have young children, you are by nature busy. I remember feeling exhausted when I thought of having a second child. Every time the thought came in, I just had this wave of exhaustion come over me, and I ended up not having a second child because I didn't want to be that busy and that exhausted, and I'm so glad I only had one child. Well, my friend has two young children, and she said, oh my gosh, you actually have time for yourself? I can't imagine it. Well, you can't. When you have young children, you really don't have time for yourself, and that is a bummer. But if you don't make some time for yourself, you will absolutely burn out. But beyond that, beyond the daily necessities, sometimes we busy ourselves because we don't want to face what's underneath in our psyche. I used to call this the Sunday neurosis, or I read that term in, I think, one of my existential therapy books. Sunday neurosis, because back in the olden days, when Sundays were days when stores were closed, TV stations didn't show very interesting programs, people went to church, people didn't do a whole lot. They remembered the Sabbath to keep it holy, according to the Ten Commandments, which we don't do that anymore. Back in those days, Sundays were really boring for a lot of people. And because things were quieter, they had to come face to face with looking inside. And people don't do that very well. What I would find when I was doing psychotherapy with a lot of people is that when they would hit their core issues, they'd frequently drop out of therapy. They'd find some other reason. They wouldn't even know that they were avoiding the deep down icky stuff that they couldn't face. They would find a reason that they got too busy, they couldn't afford it anymore, they got sick, they made a reason to be angry at the therapist, all kinds of reasons that people have to distract and run away from their problems. And people do that with all kinds of addictions. They do it with sports. They do it with computer addictions. They do it with relationship addictions or with drugs or gambling or alcohol, or, you know, alcohol is a drug, but all different kinds of ways. People just do not look deep within because it's really hard work. It's really hard, but the joys and the rewards of looking within go way beyond anything this entire world can give you. The whole world will never make you happy. If you ever have thought about it, when you've attained a goal that you had, whether it was a job promotion, whether it was attaining a certain relationship or a certain type of relationship, or a certain physical health goal, like exercising a certain way or building your muscles, or a hobby or a skill, a dancing or a sport or whatever, you completed your college degree or you wrote certain papers or whatever you did, whatever your goal was that you attained, how long did that make you happy? Probably not for very long. Our goals make us happy for a while. Money makes us happy for a while. Being distracted makes us happy for a while, but not permanently. Because the only thing that permanently makes us happy is going within, looking deep within our psyches, letting go of our individual sense of a separated self, and joining back with our Creator. Whether you call that the universe, whether you call it spirit, whether you call it the all, the divine beingness, God, whatever you call it, humanity, if we don't get to that place of oneness and connectedness with our inner spirit that is connected with all of life, we will never be happy. We will do an endless search for things outside of ourselves to fill that gaping hole, that emptiness that we try to fill by being distracted, but it never happens. And that is as an aside, one of the problems with the over-medication of our society, people have depression and they have anxiety, and some people with really serious conditions do need and do benefit from medication. But in large part, what has happened with psychotherapy and the psychotherapeutic community in general is that people who should not be on medication are on medication. And all medication does is it's one more form of a distraction, because people will go on the meds and they'll have a honeymoon period with the meds, and for about 2 or 3 months they'll feel better, and then they'll plateau out and return to their previous level of dysfunction. They might be a little notch above their previous level of dysfunction, but it, all in all, the meds are not really helping. And I saw that over my 25-year practice in psychotherapy, that we went from not giving meds at all to giving one or two to giving 5 or 6, and it's a mess. It's just a mess. So be really careful. If your therapist wants you to go on meds, just be really careful. Try everything else first, pretty much. Sometimes if you're really suicidal, you need meds, but then you also have to be really careful, because some meds cause an increase in suicidal thoughts. So it's a real catch-22. The fourth need is to be superior or inferior. And that one is one of the ways that we compare ourselves to others. A Course in Miracles says that the Holy Spirit accepts while the ego compares. And comparison is actually food for the ego, because when you compare, you end up either feeling better than somebody else or less than somebody else. And some of the ways that I've messed up my relationships is by comparing the different men that I've been with each other. And that's not fair. It's just not fair, and it's not right, because everyone has their strong points and their weak points. And I have to say that my men have been really cool, because they have not done that to me. On the other hand, had they done that to me, I probably would have felt it more, and I wouldn't have done it to them, because my men have been pretty good overall. But if they treated me the way I treated them, I would have been out of there. And yet, maybe it would have given me empathy to not do that, to take care of their feelings the way they've been kind and gentle with mine. So even though I've done this work, I have not been perfect myself. And one of the things I like about Kathy Freston's book is that she admits her own flaws and her own foibles as well. So I'm going to read from her book, and this is on page 56. The need to be superior or inferior is the ego's way of keeping us apart from each other by focusing on flaws. It plagues us with attacks of self-pity or delusions of grandeur that keep us from the fundamental truth that we are all created equally and from the same source. Kathy has a deep sense of spirituality. We are all created equally, and we all do come from the same substance. You can call that God, you can call that Creator, whatever you call it, we are all one. And one thing that is common, no matter whether you are rich or you're poor, whether you grow up privileged or whether you grow up with hardly anything, whether you grow up black or white or Chinese or Native American or whatever, it doesn't matter. The one thing we all want is to be happy. And if you look at the politics, the divisive politics that goes on in not only our government but other governments, everyone has a different opinion about how that happiness should be brought about. But one of the ways that you join and you stop pushing other people away is by not judging. You may not agree with a certain person's opinion. You may not agree with your partner's opinion. But when you get down to it, almost every opinion, even the crazy ones of your partner, have some merit behind them. So one of the things that is really helpful in relationships is to put yourself in your partner's shoes and say, I can see how he or she might feel that. I may not agree, but I can respect, and we can agree to disagree. Because that level of respect, that your partner is a thinking, logical, decent human being, and maybe there's another way of looking at this, is one of the best traits that you can have in a relationship. When you come from the place that your way is the only right way, you're going to be in trouble. And I was in trouble with that for the first couple years of my relationship with Rod, but not on everything, just on certain things. I always thought that my way of communicating and talking things out was the best way. And he was having none of it, none of it. He doesn't like to talk, and he thinks you can solve problems without talking. Finally, after 7 or 8 years into our relationship, one of my friends showed me this book called How to Improve Your Marriage Without Talking, which I would highly recommend. It's by Patricia Love, just like the word sounds, Love, L-O-V-E. What a name for a relationship therapist, huh? And Stephen Stosny, S-T-O-S-N-E-Y. How to Improve Your Marriage Without Talking About It. And it's very good. And it says, you know, get back to whatever connects you. Get back to having sex more often. You don't need to work out every problem before you have sex. Because then, you know what happens when you have sex? Boy, the problems just don't seem as big anymore. You just don't care. And I've always been able to see when I am upset about something. When I go around the house and I'm angry at my partner and I'm complaining, grumbling inside about this or that, I've learned enough from A Course in Miracles that if I am sitting there noting every single flaw that he has in his personality, there's something going on with me. It's not about him at all. And that is something you will find is that when you are whole and happy and healthy within yourself, you don't get mad at other people. You let them be who they are. So if you're going overtime, grumbling about your partner, stop and ask yourself, what am I upset about within myself? What do I feel like I'm missing? A lot of times we feel like our partner should be filling that missing hole, that missing gap. But that gap and that hole can only be filled with your relationship with spirit, with God, with nature, with your higher self. And until you get that filled that way, you are never going to be happy with your partner. You can get a new partner, and the same old issues are going to come up. You can call in with questions at 917-932-8881 or go to my website, lauriecoburn.com, and click the Ask Lori tab, and I will email you later on in the week. Okay, so Kathy Freston says that the four ego needs are the need to be right, the need to be in control, the need to be distracted, and the need to feel superior or inferior. I'd like to compare that to one of the techniques that I use frequently in my own life, and I also used it in my practice, the Sedona method. And it talks about the four ego wants. It says the ego wants to either feel approved of or disapproved of. It wants to feel secure or insecure. It wants to feel separate or one with other people. Or it wants to feel control or out of control. And it says that wants arise in pairs of duality because everything in our life arises in pairs. So when you have a desire for approval, the other half of you has a desire to be disapproved of. And when you take a good hard look at that, you can see that that's true. You might know some people who are always buying gifts for other people. And that's because they want them to like them. Now, if they're coming from a sense of, oh, you don't like me and I have to buy you this gift so that you like me, there's this other part of them that feels disapproved of and is striving to get the approval. But deep down, since we are all projecting our own worlds, the desire to be approved of comes right along with the desire to be disapproved of. And until we look at that shadow side of ourselves, that would be the dark side. We have to look at the part of us that actually wants to sabotage ourselves and be disapproved of. And that can be kind of hard to do. That's where psychotherapy can come in handy, or a really good friend who is observant and can gently and lovingly point things out to you. Like, hey, you know, there's another part of you that actually kind of wants to sabotage yourself and wants to be disapproved of. The other one in the Sedona method is to have a sense of control. So I had a client one time who was a perfectionist, and he would work really hard, and he was really smart, and he would work and work overtime and be a high achiever and do things really well. And then he would say, the heck with it all, and he would chuck it all and become extremely irresponsible and go off on a cocaine binge and totally sabotage himself. And he had this pattern. And when he was doing really well, I kept trying to get him to look at the side of him that was creeping up and wanted to sabotage himself. But when he was doing well, he did not want to look at that. He just wouldn't. And I kept saying, here it comes, because I could see the signs that he was going to go on a relapse. And sure enough, he did. But he didn't want to look at that. He only wanted to look at the part, that one part. So I'm hoping, as he's gone on in his self-awareness, that he has finally started to look at the whole and look at the pattern of both sides of his personality, which he did not do while he was working with me. The other Sedona method that the ego wants is to feel a sense of security or insecurity. We're always looking for security in terms of money or a relationship or a good job or a family being intact and healthy and whole. And then there's another part of us that actually wants to be insecure. Now, that may sound a little bit ridiculous, like, well, why would any of us want to be insecure? We have to look at it this way. We are the ones creating our own lives with our thoughts. A lot of us, and I shouldn't say a lot of us, all of us at some level hate ourselves. And most of us do not want to look at that side of us that hates ourselves. But we do. We can't stand ourselves. And so we actually create situations in which we feel insecure. We sabotage ourselves and we use drugs. We do things that we know are going to get us kicked out of our jobs, or we do things that we know will cause relationship problems. And then we feel insecure. But the tricky part of it is that now we think we feel insecure because we lost our job, or because we don't have money. Or say you have someone who's a spending addict who spends all their money and then they don't have any money and then they feel insecure. It looks like there's an external situation that is making us feel insecure. But the truth is, we have done it to ourselves. And that's where spiritual systems like A Course in Miracles and other systems say you have to take responsibility for your darkness. There's nothing out there doing anything to you. Now, this took me years and years of doing the workbook lessons of A Course in Miracles to actually apply this to myself, because for years I thought there were things out there causing me to feel insecure, whether it was the economy or whether it was the man I was with or whether it was the dysfunctional family relationships or whatever I thought it was, whether it was my health. And now I can't get away with that at all. I know that everything is a function of my own thinking and my own projections onto the world. So I can't blame anyone or anything, and I can't be a victim any longer. We actually want to be victims. We want something else to be the cause of our problems. The difficulty with that is that if something else is the cause of your problem, then you are abdicating your power to solve that problem. You can solve all your own problems by changing your mind, by taking responsibility, and instead of victimizing yourself, stepping into your true identity as your higher self. Your higher self, your true self, is connected to all the power in the universe and all the love in the universe. And if this is a new idea for you, keep exploring it. Keep looking at different paths, just different spiritual paths or psychotherapy paths that show you the power of your mind to choose. A Course in Miracles says we're always only making one choice, and that is between love and fear. If you want to make it really simple and you don't want to follow any path, do this one thing. With every single thought, with every single action, ask yourself, am I doing this out of fear or am I doing this out of love? And I guarantee you, when you are doing it consistently out of love, your entire life will change and it will become so wonderful. And you don't have to believe in God. You don't have to believe in anything outside of yourself for this to happen. This just works no matter what. And you can also apply that to your relationship conflict. Everything you are thinking or saying or doing with or for your partner, ask, am I doing this from love or am I doing this from fear? And again, when you choose love over and over and over, your entire relationship will change. Your partner will either stop doing what he or she's been doing that bugs you, or it won't bug you anymore, or you may end up leaving the relationship, but you would leave it in love. You would leave it from a place of love, saying, this isn't loving to either one of us to be in conflict all the time. I really don't want any conflict. I love you. I've got to go, but I still love you. If you ever change, let me know, or maybe not. But your entire life will change if you simply follow, am I doing this from love or from fear? If we look at Kathy Freston's book again, she writes, there are times when I feel vastly inferior to my husband. He is very knowledgeable about history, business, and world affairs. If I remain unconscious of my fear of not being enough, I can become defensive to cover up my feeling small. On the other hand, there are times when I feel I tower above him on subjects of literature or philosophy or psychology, and I can't believe he doesn't understand what seems to be second nature to me. So here she's talking about that need to be superior or inferior, which would correspond with the Sedona Method's thing about approval or disapproval. It can also correspond to the Sedona Method's thing about separation or oneness. We all have a desire to be separate and different from others. Correspondingly, the other side of the coin, we all have a desire to feel one and connected to others. And we vacillate between the two. And in a healthy sense of self, you'll probably have a balance between the two. You'll stand in the middle, and the ebb and flow of the tides will come and go, and you'll just be able to connect with your partner when it's appropriate and be separate. These relationships where people have to do everything together, those are nuts. Those are not healthy. Oh, we just love each other so much that we do everything together. That's unhealthy it would be what psychotherapists call enmeshed. You're too enmeshed. You're too entangled with the other person. You don't have enough of your own sense of self-identity. Conversely, if you have a relationship where you don't do anything together and you spend all your time apart, that is a sense of separation that you might as well not even be married. There are people I know that have worked separate shifts all their lives. One would work the morning shift and one would work the afternoon shift. And then when they retired, they didn't know how to relate to each other at all. And that is too much separation. So you need a balance between separation and togetherness. And the same thing goes for your feelings toward all of humanity. You need a sense of your own individual self, but you also need to know that within that individuality, you are also connected to the whole, and that no one is better or worse than you. Because again, the ego wants to compare, to make inferior or superior. Your true self knows that you are very important and wonderful and an integral part of the whole. And so is every single person on the planet. That includes people that we don't think we like, people that are the dregs of society, that includes homeless people or drug addicts or criminals. Everyone is important in some way. Everyone. And if you shut anyone out of your heart, what is happening is that you're shutting a part of yourself out of your heart. The more you learn to love yourself, the more you will love everyone. Now, that doesn't mean you condone acts of murder or criminal acts or violent acts or anything like that. You don't condone them. But you know that there is a person underneath those behavioral actions, and you love the person, though you stop the action. And I noticed on the news tonight where this mother turned in her son who was planning on doing some type of killing spree in a movie theater, a copycat of the Aurora, Colorado thing. And hats off to this mother, because you know this mother loves her son no matter what. She would love her son even if he went into the movie theater and did that. But she did the right thing, and she turned her own son in. And I'm so grateful to her. That was so loving. That was loving to everyone, and that was loving to her son as well. Because to allow another person to commit violence or to stand by and do nothing, or to allow somebody to be violent to you without stopping that person, that's not love. These women who are abused and say, oh, but I love him. Well, yes, you can still love an abuser, but to allow him to abuse you or to do nothing or to continue that cycle of abuse, that is not love. That is fear. So it comes back to that question again. Am I doing this out of love or fear? Okay. And Kathy writes on page 57, she says, the ego presents us with many pitfalls, but it also has its benefits. It assists us in recognizing and celebrating our differences. We are unique after all, and this uniqueness works in concert with our core spirituality. And I would agree that everyone has unique characteristics that should be celebrated. What she says later on, though, I'm not sure I fully agree with. She writes, the question is not whether the ego is good or bad, but rather to what degree we allow it to rule our lives and relationships. Ego is an aspect of the mind that serves a purpose. We just can't let it get out of hand. And I hear a lot of people say that you need an ego to function on this planet, but you just want the ego in the back seat of the car, and not being a backseat driver either. Just put it in the back seat while your higher self drives the car. And I would agree with that to a point. As long as you recognize that only one of those is the ultimate reality, your higher self, the one self that we are all one of the interconnected oneself. You can call it the Christ self. You can call it all that is, beingness, spirit. That one self that we all share is the only true reality. And when you put the ego in the back seat, you have to recognize that the ego and all of this world is one big illusion. Because if you are too attached to your small self, into your individual preferences and your individual identity, then you're caught in the illusion. And when you wake up from the illusion, a lot of people call this world a dream, call it a movie, call it an illusion. When you wake up, what happens is you start seeing your ego identity, your small self, your body personality construct. You actually start seeing that as an actor in the movie, as a figure in the dream, and you start detaching from it. It doesn't mean you love yourself any less. In fact, you love yourself more because you see that you, as a figure in the dream or an actor in the play or the movie, are the same as every other figure or every other actor. And you're able to actually separate back. You're able to witness or observe the ego functioning without getting drawn in and attached to it, because it's our small self that is actually arguing with our partner. When we are attached to certain outcomes in an argument, like it's got to be my way, not your way, or when we're fighting about an opinion, or we think that our partner has deprived us of something or attacked us, those are all functions of your small ego self. And one of the things that has helped me, and not one of the things, I would say the thing that has helped me most in my spiritual awakening is lesson 96 in the workbook lessons of A Course in Miracles, which states, you are not two selves, but one. And the name of the lesson, I'm forgetting it offhand, but I think it's I am one self. Salvation comes from my one self. Salvation comes from my one self. The lesson before it is I am one self united with my Creator. And lesson 96 says, you think that you're the home of evil and good. You think there's two parts to you. You have this nice part to you and you have this really bad part to you that you want to cover up. So that bad part is that shadow part that we were talking about earlier, that dark side that we have to face, because if we don't face it, it keeps rising up. It keeps poking through the cracks, or it's like a pot boiling over. It is going to boil over and come out the cracks. It will. But A Course in Miracles says that part of us that has all the ego personality traits, both good and bad, that is the total illusion. You are so far beyond that. And that can sound really scary to the ego when it says you are going to give up your individual sense of self. But it's really not. When you experience it, it is actually the most freeing, wonderful thing you can ever possibly experience, because you're not giving up anything. You are just actually moving into all the joy and all the good things about your small self personality, and then expanding that to possess and contain all the good traits of everyone in the entire world. Because you're connected, and as they grow and are blessed, so are you. And it's an experience. I can only tell you that if you are willing to let go of being right, being in control, being separate, or wanting to be insecure so that you have something to feel victimized about, if you are willing to let go of those states of mind and take responsibility for them, you will move into a oneness, not only with your partner, but with yourself and with the entire universe, that is absolutely beautiful. And that is what I was talking about earlier, about that is the only thing that is going to fill this hole. And prior to recognizing this in myself and coming to the place where I know myself as that capital S self, the higher self, prior to moving into that space, I used to pick fights with my partner all the time because I was trying to create drama. I was trying to create energy. I was trying to stir stuff up so that we could then fight and then we could make up. And when I did that, I felt alive. And when I did that, I would draw him back into my zone and I could say, well, let's, you know, we're fixing our relationship. We're working on our relationship. And then we could have sex and we could make up and then feel all connected and cozy again. Until the next time. Until the next time things got a little blasé and I needed to pick another fight in order to start the whole cycle again. And that was crazy making. And yet it is what so many of us do. We feel that empty hole. And I felt the empty hole because I wasn't connected with my true self. Once I started getting connected with my true self and I knew that I was one self, not two, not divided into good or bad, small and alone and separate, and all those ego needs that we just talked about, the need to be superior or inferior, the need to be distracted, the need to be right, or the need to be in control, or the need to get approval, or the need to push people away and feel separate. Once I stopped doing all those ego game plays, and granted, I still fall into that far more often than I would like to, but almost compared to before, it's rare. Once I stopped doing that and I knew that the higher self, the Course in Miracles calls it the Holy Son of God, you are the higher self, you are the true self, you are all that is. You are love. You are the love that you seek in your relationships. Once I started primarily identifying with that self, all the ego games just stopped. They just stopped. I can't do them anymore. They don't fit who I am anymore. I can't pick a fight without knowing I'm doing it while I'm doing it. And it just stops and I start laughing. Or I just say, nah, not going there, just not going there. And that is the biggest thing that is going to help your relationship. Working on yourself, working to become, actually, let me back that up. You don't have to become anything. You already are that higher self, and it's more of a recognition and an acceptance that that is who you are than it is striving to become that. So that is one of the traps that I found when I was in psychotherapy. As a psychotherapist, I went to psychotherapy myself for many, many years. But the ego, that small self that feels separate and feels flawed, will keep finding all kinds of things for you to work on to make you believe that you have to work on something to attain that higher self. That's the trap. That's a trap of psychotherapy. It's a trap of self-help books. It's a trap of spiritual paths. You don't have to do anything. You just need to accept what you are. You are that one higher self, and that is where your relationships will become beautiful. They will become peaceful, loving, happy. All of your problems will disappear, every single one. When you know who you are, you don't have money problems, job problems, health problems, relationship problems. You don't have any problems. Because you know that all problems are part of the illusory small self. So that's it for tonight. I will be back next Wednesday night at 9 p.m. In the meantime, if you have questions, go to my website, lauriecoburn.com, and you can email me. You can also find me on Facebook. And I also have a book called Breaking Free, How Forgiveness and A Course in Miracles Can Set You Free, which you can read excerpts of on my website. So good night and blessings to you. May you know yourself as your true self. Good night.